Meanwhile, here's Gramatica. Romo holds. 19-yard field goal attempt. Oh, it is fumbled by Romo. And then Romo's going to run to the end zone. And he's going to get tackled by Jordan Babineau. Amazing.
David. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Number 9, Tony Romo. He figures to factor into the conversation upcoming here today on the DDFP. And hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well wherever you are. Here in Studio 66, I physically sit alone. However, thanks to technology of the 21st century looming over my left shoulder, not one but two fellas who jumped in on the social media, or perhaps I invited them into the conversation, because when I talk about quarterbacks in pro football, there's just a small handful of fellas that I'll go to tap into their wealth of knowledge and insight, and chief among them from CBS Sports, the host of Pick Six and Beyond, one of our favorite guys in sports media, a fulsome head of hair here in summertime. It's our pal Will Brinson. What's happening with you?
See, this is a clear early bias against the Philip Rivers guy. I will point out, though, that the haircut, you got to do it right before the beach trip that's coming up with the in-laws in a few weeks. And if I may add to my own introduction, a Shecky recipient.
Ooh, look at that. See, that's what you call a trump card here. And that will be something for our other guest today to overcome as he defends. I assume, I don't know this for a fact, but I assume we can anticipate a lot of New York City, pro New York City opinions coming from the guy from Sports Illustrated and Odd Sharks. It's Nick Costas. What's happening with you, pal? Welcome to the DDFP.
It is a true honor to be on the program, Dave. A big time fan of yours, and it does look like Will's got like a goiter out of the side of his head there. Like, what is that tuft of hair you've got coming, like cascading down some sort of, like you have a tennis ball surgically implanted to the side of your head? Now, I will say, I am from New York, and I am a very pro New York, but I've killed the Giants more than anyone the last couple years here. So I do want that to be on record here, that while I do have a man crush on Eli Manning, I have killed Eli and the Giants.
All right, but that's really not something that's praiseworthy in my book. No, I mean, of course, you're if you praise a local team that stinks, then you're just a sucker. You know, when True. They demand, when coaches and GMs and organizations make that announcement, now more than ever, we need your loyalty. Like, no, you don't. Listen, I'm a paying customer. That's what you get out of me. Don't stink, and then I'll pay more attention to you.
Local area man kills football team for winning 8 games in 2 years. Congratulations on the
no, or trading Hall of Fame wide receivers for, you know, a bag of balls. That kind of sucked too. Or taking a running back second overall. These are all bad things. Yeah.
All right. We want to talk about, because one of the issues that came up last week is NFC East QBs of the 21st century. McNabb said that he's better than Troy Aikman, deserves in the Hall of Fame. We want to get in on all that. But before we do, let's very quickly then review what happened a little more than a month ago. Now, my contention is, Costas and Brinson, is that the Giants really could be players in the NFC East, and who knows, maybe they still will be in 2019. But if they would have merely done the exact same things that they did in free agency and in the draft, save what they did with Daniel Jones, if instead they take Williams out of Bama and add him to what is already a much improved offensive line, to help, I mean, Saquon Barkley, as I always say, is in his prime right now. It is not equivalent to a quarterback who needs a couple of years to really get to where to the peak of physical and mental and all that kind of stuff. An NFL running back in the 21st century, fair or not, is in his prime the day he walks out onto the field, physically and all. I mean, you know, by the time he hits second contract, he's going to be a diminished version of himself. So make up the offensive line, maybe get one of those edge rushers, and this Giants team would be fine with Eli in 2019. How say you, Costas?
I don't agree with that because Eli Manning's still the quarterback. And I think, look, I love Eli over the balance of his career, and I think Eli's a Hall of Famer. Will, you're making that face. I've been killing Eli for years now. Eli Manning absolutely stinks, and it doesn't mean he doesn't deserve a gold jacket, but the guy's terrible. Like, he had time to throw at points last year. He can't hit the broadside of a barn anymore. So for me, like, look, I would have preferred them maybe to take Josh Allen with Josh Allen on the board here. But if Daniel Jones is good, none of it matters. None of Gettleman's, all of the faux pas make a difference as long as Daniel Jones is good. And yeah, like, you can make the case that maybe, you know, with the pass rusher, with the offensive lineman, that the Giants in 2019 could be better. The fact of the matter is that Eli Manning, I think, still stinks, and the Giants will not do much of anything this year if he's the starting quarterback for the balance of the season, which I think most of us expect to be the case.
Go ahead, Brinson.
I agree. I think Eli is a average quarterback for the duration of his career. I think he's a below average quarterback now. I do have the Giants actually be better than Nick thinks. I'm with you, Dave. I see the mixture. I'll tell you the mixture of the two teams I see. It's not a complete mirror of this by any means.
He stole my take, by the way, here, Dave. This is important. Will took my take here, and I know what he's about to say, and he stole it from me directly. This was my take, and he's laughing because he knows it's true.
It's not true. I think the 2015 Carolina Panthers, and they leaned on Cam a lot, but it was a team that was designed by Dave Gettleman in terms of they wanted to run the ball effectively, play great defense, be stout on the interior of the defensive line, get pressure on you. I think the Giants' defensive line is going to be pretty good. I don't know about the rest of the defense. And then, yeah, look, Nick and I have talked about this, but the 2016 Cowboys, you'd be a poor man's version of that, where you can run the ball effectively with Saquon Barkley, let Eli throw some slants and stuff like that, let Sterling Shepard break some long plays, and maybe you lean on Saquon Barkley to keep the defense fresh. That's – if you can pull off some – amalgamation of those two teams, then maybe you can go on and win the division. I don't know that that's going to be.
So win the division? What are you
of
nuts?
Course. How good do you think the division is? Who's some juggernaut looming in the NFC East right now?
The Eagles and Cowboys, I think, are clearly both better than the Giants. And the common denominator between those two teams that Will just mentioned, and I agree with him, it's bend but don't break defense and control the clock with the run game, right? But that Panthers team had Cam Newton. That Cowboys team had a mobile Dak Prescott, albeit in his rookie year. Eli Manning can't move. I'm confident. I don't think I could actually beat Eli Manning in a foot race because I'm not athletic, but Eli ain't beating any defenders to the edge anytime soon.
I agree with that. So why is Eli even there at this point? You know, and by the way, let me just throw in the other thing is, obviously there are going to be some passing situations that arise, whether it's Jones or Eli. I mean, it just makes no sense. If you didn't think Eli was in a position to perhaps take you to the playoffs in 2019, then there is no reason to have him there. Then they should have moved on from Eli. Eli in this offseason, if not prior to that. But the guy who can salvage things offensively for them and make them more than just the one-dimensional Saquon attack is Evan Ingram. If he can finally stay healthy and be out there, they have more than enough at the pass catcher spot. And it turns me back to what I said already. If they would have just gone after some more help on the offensive line, I think Eli, he's the classic. He is the number one personification of a guy. If he is perfectly clean, if he is able to stand back there for that extra beat, he's fine in 2019. He's not a stud or anything, but he'd be fine back there if you merely protected him. No,
Daniel Jones is pretty mobile. He's really mobile.
So you actually think so last thing on Daniel Jones, is he going to get some play here in September or October? Costa, start with you.
I don't think in September or October. I mean, I think it's a good sign for the 2019 Giants if we don't see Daniel Jones until after Thanksgiving. It'll mean that they're in contention or somewhat in contention, but I would be stunned. Look, I'm on record saying the Giants should have drafted Sam Darnold number two last year. They should have moved on from Eli Manning last year. So I certainly think that he shouldn't be the quarterback this year. I would be disappointed. It's kind of tough to gauge, right? Because if Eli starts all 16 games, kind of what's unspoken there is they're going to be in contention. And as a Giants fan, I would love to see that. But also as a Giants fan, I have to be realistic enough to know that Eli's done. And we just took a quarterback six overall, and I did say we, because that's, you know, I'm part of the team,
that's
of course.
That's fine. You are a part of the team, and never apologize that around, at least on this show, Costas.
And get Daniel Jones in there. Let's
yeah,
go.
You don't listen, but you never apologize for the we and us. You care much more about the Giants than Daniel Jones cares about the Giants. He's been there for 5 weeks. You've been there for your entire life. Who do you think cares more about what happens to the organization?
No question.
I mean, I love when players get on me for the we and us jazz. Yeah, guess what? I was sitting in Three River Stadium. Where were you? Not born yet, friend. You know what I'm saying there, Brinson?
I'm with that. I think the thing with Eli is how much of a factor is ownership playing in this whole quarterback situation? Like, are they trying to do, I don't know, what the Yankees do? Trot Eli around the whole country, get a chair, parade him around like one of the great heroes of lore, like Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera. Have a little surprise waiting for him, like a little bowl of cheese when he gets to Wisconsin. Who knows? Maybe they're trying to do that. We'll have to wait and see. And maybe they force Dave Gettleman to take Daniel Jones because he's able to make, like, maybe this is a Westworld situation. And they're just letting Eli leech onto Daniel Jones' body as a host and take over for him. I mean, I don't know. They look exactly alike. I don't think see him early on in the year, but I think they want to give Eli that victory tour until things are just completely out of hand.
It's not the NBA. I don't think Eli, if he were to announce this is my last season, it's going to be him going into visiting stadiums and getting rocking chairs from all his foes along the way. So it's a different thing entirely. They had their chance to move on a couple of times over when they benched him and Peabody. It was all right. There was a dust up. There was a little brush fire in New York City, but that was the time to move on. And then they had to go back. I'm with you that there is some PR element to it. Ooh, New York City did not like when we benched Eli. Let's not do that again. You know, they now 2 years
it
later.
It was more like how it happened, though, and like the guy that did it, Ben McAdoo, who was not fit to lace up Eli Manning's, you know, cleats. Ben McAdoo should have benched himself and resigned with that stupid haircut and his stupid, you know, play call fades on the goal line. Enough Ben McAdoo. Like, that was what people were pissed at in New York, was not so much that Eli was getting benched. It was the clown that did it, Ben McAdoo, on his
well,
way.
And also who it was for. It was also for Geno.
Yeah, it should have been for Davis Webb. Like, if you're going to bench him, you know, put the young kid in. What's the point of putting Geno Smith in the game?
Hey, by the way, before we take another step here, Eddie Spaghetti behind the glass is with Costas every step of the way. Is that right, Spaghetti, New York native?
For the most part, I will admit I was wrong. I did not want to take Sam Darnold or quarterback last year.
Oh, you're not? Wait a second. This is breaking news. No, you now concede that you wish you would have taken Sam Darnold?
No. I'm saying I did not want to. I believe I bought hype into that they could be kind of competitive last year, and I was wrong. So I will admit that.
So you are conceding that you were wrong all this time. All this furious defense when I told you that it was a mistake, and you're like, have you seen Saquon, though? Like,
well, no,
yeah,
but the,
I see them losing every week. He's terrific.
What fell apart was more like the offensive line being just god-awful and stuff, but I think this year, now I'm going to buy into it again, is that the offensive line is a lot better. It's a lot. I mean, O'Hara came on here himself and talked about how that Will Hernandez and Nate Solder last year got to a certain point where Hernandez was not making he learned the playbook more and was not making Solder look as bad as he was. Jalapio is healthy again. They signed Zeitler, which is humongous, and they just signed Mike Remmers, who's going to move back from right guard to right tackle. So I think the offensive line actually is a sneaky, really, really strong part of the team this year.
I appreciate that optimism.
All right, let's talk about.
And I'm not knocking Eddie or Giant. I'm not saying this is Giants fan specific, but it was like Eddie was like, listen, I want to admit I was wrong about thinking that this offensive line would be good. I'm probably going to talk myself back into it. And then he immediately talked himself back in.
Yeah, I can see it going south.
All right, let's talk about this. And by the way, just one thing that my recurring theme since really January has been, poor Carson Wentz. Yes, the Eagles appear to be loaded, but it all hinges on 11. And that kid is under so much pressure right now, and he knows it. And all these predictions, I think that it sounds fine in May and June to talk about, like, this guy's an MVP candidate right now. Yes, he is. But that only ultimately heaps more pressure on him. And it doesn't really make much of a difference what he does in October. It's going to matter whether or not he wins the NFC East is one thing, but what he does in January this year he has so much pressure on him to live up to Nicky Foles. It's crazy. And I could absolutely see some percentage of human beings crumbling under that pressure. Like when Mark Sanchez did, when they brought Tim Tebow in, some guys rise to the challenge. Other guys crumble from it. I don't know what Carson Wentz is going to do till we see it.
How about we see Carson Wentz get to January?
Right.
Like, he's got to play a full season. But, and by the way, I mean, just to point out that the guys in the desert, they actually have Carson Wentz as a top five MVP candidate, because Brady and Breeze and all those guys have fallen so far back just because of how people perceive them at their age and all that. So Wentz is like, anyway, he's considered one of the top candidates without getting into specifics.
Who's going to win? All right, you know what? Now I'm off track. Now I'm thinking about MVPs in June. Who's going to win the MVP in 2019? Completely fair to ask that in June.
It's Ben Roethlisberger, and here's why.
Love it.
I think, look, Ben's going to, if he plays 16, he's going to, look, you see this stuff, what he's doing this offseason. He's posting pictures, like, he's up in the leadership log cabin with all his teammates. You know, I can't stop pointing out just how much leadership and teamwork we're doing together. He is going to have a big season, a spite-filled season. The Steelers' offense with Juju and James Conner is going to be very good. I think Jalen Samuels is going to be a big part of that passing game as well. I think Vance McDonald has a big year. And as a result, people are going to look at the end of the year, Ben's going to have 4,000 passing yards. The Steelers are going to win the division. He's going to have 30 passing touchdowns. People are going to say, he did it without Brown and Bell. That's value right there, baby. That's our MVP.
I love the sentiment, and I do agree to the extent that Roethlisberger wins, however you want to measure that. It sounds like you are leaning in the three-way race after this breakup of Bell and Brown, that Roethlisberger is going to look the best of the trio after the split, Brinson.
The most attractive on Instagram, right? Like, he's the, you know, like when you go and you break up with somebody and you go and post pictures on Instagram and Facebook just to show how well you're doing and to make sure the person knows how big of a mistake they made leaving you. That's Big Ben in this.
All right, Costas, go ahead.
MVP. I do want to. I love Will's pick of Ben Roethlisberger, by the way. And Dave, I think the Steelers are going to be nasty this year, and nasty in a good way. I think they're absolutely going to win the AFC North, and everyone being so bullish on the Browns makes me feel even better about Pittsburgh winning the division. So huge year for Ben Roethlisberger. I hate to agree with Goiter Brinson, but I kind of have to here. I'm going to go a little chalk. And I'm going to give you two quarterbacks, and this is like, I can't, like, Will gave you a better pick than me, more of a dark horse than I'll give, than he gave, rather. Andrew Luck or Patrick Mahomes, I think it'll be one of those two guys. Mahomes is going to have another monster year, whether Tyreek's there or not. I think Mecole Hardman, he's not Tyreek Hill, but he has sort of that similar skill set, and you know Mahomes is going to put up big numbers, and I think Andrew Luck is absolutely due for a monster year. The Colts, in my eyes, are an 11-win football team, and I think Luck's going to be a monster this year, so I'd give you Luck, or I'd give you Mahomes, but I do have to admit, I really do like Will's pick of Ben Roethlisberger, and I think this is a massive revenge FU season from Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh.
I mean, certainly that's the case, and I feel like this is kind of a Tomlin special. You know, he loves the platitudes, and no, I mean, everybody, any team that wins a title, no one believes in them outside their locker room. I don't know if you've heard, but I mean, for real, That is actually sort of the case with Pittsburgh. They can actually say that and mean it. Everybody's turned. Now nobody thinks we can do it anymore.
Browns are the favorites to win the division. The Browns have won 8 games in the last 3 years. Like, what the hell is happening?
And can I throw this out there on the Brown? Like the quotes that I've just emanating, even like today as we tape this, at a Browns camp as it concerns Duke Johnson. Freddie Kitchens quotes about Duke Johnson. Well, I'd like to win the lottery, so he's going to be a Cleveland Brown. Or what about what Baker said about Duke Johnson? Basically like, yeah, that's all in the past, but he wants to get on this train. He's got to get on this train. I can't imagine that there are a lot of veteran players that are going to be cool. Like, Browns fans might really like that, but are there going to be a lot of players that like that attitude from me? I love Baker Mayfield. I think that might have been a misstep from Baker Mayfield.
I mean, it definitely is. Of course, listen, yes, I have a chip on my shoulder on behalf of Ben Roethlisberger, but imagine if Ben Roethlisberger just said that today. What would be the reaction? See, he hasn't changed. He's still a jerk. He still treats him like everybody's his kid and all that kind of stuff. Yes, he, you know, Baker Mayfield is the leader of the team. But I'm with you completely that this was a little bit too much out of the sophomore.
And Freddie Kitchens. I love Freddie Kitchens. I think he's awesome. I think he's going to be a good coach.
Do we? I mean, you don't know that, though. I mean, talk about all the big...
He's good for us. He's good
all
for
the
us
big mouths. He's never done Kitchens. Anything. He's never coached a game in his life, but this is definitely the guy with not just talented, but big ego guys. He's definitely the guy to solve the riddle of that and get them into the postseason.
My point is he did win the lottery. He's coaching the 2019. He's not even an OC before. I just like his general attitude and how he's different than a lot of coach speak that you hear. But I think those are the two big problems with the Browns this year. And I'm not sure how the hell we've got here. But I think when you look at what Cleveland has, tons of skill position guys, right? Tons of defensive weapons on the front seven. Good cornerbacks, good young cornerbacks.
Offensive line stinks.
That's right.
Problem. I mean, it's going to be a problem. And Freddie Kitchens is not going to be just sitting there managing the offense this year. He's going to be trying to manage the whole game. I'm not trying to compare him to Hugh at all, but that's what got Hugh Jackson in trouble. Is he was stretched way too thin, and he was trying to do everything. He didn't delegate any responsibility.
That's what got Hugh in trouble. That's what got him in trouble. Was that? Oh. Yeah. Okay.
patented hubris line.
Listen, yeah, that I mean, look, Freddie Kitchens is great to the extent that I enjoy his homespun wisdom. I don't know what he is guaranteed. Well, did you see what happened with Baker in the second half of the season? Yes, they completely blew up what Hugh had put on tape, and the NFL defenses took a minute to adjust. By the way, when Baker and company faced halfway decent teams down the stretch, they got smoked by those teams. The idea that Baker Mayfield is an unsolvable riddle for defensive coordinators of the NFL is again, perhaps overly optimistic. We'll have to wait and see on that one. All right, let's talk some 21st century QBs. I don't know if you know this, Costas, but me and Brinson have some track record when it applies to NFC South QBs. Annually, we like to rank 1 through 4, how we're going to regard them by New Year's Day, and rarely do we get it correct. But we'll bravely ignore the rearview mirror and look into the horizon now with you, or actually I guess this is rear view mirror stuff as well. Let's start with McNabb v. Aikman. Can we spend 20 seconds or less on this? Costas, McNabb is not as good as Aikman, we agree?
McNabb is not as good as Aikman, okay. Correct. I would take Troy Aikman over McNabb, but I have to say this, like, outside of maybe Troy Aikman, like, as a Giants fan, no quarterback, like, struck fear into my heart in the NFC East the way that Donovan McNabb did.
Okay,
so,
I love
it. The exception maybe of Aikman. So But I love Aikman, and Aikman's better than McNabb, but, like, the chasm between the two is not as huge as people think.
That is, well, Eddie Spaghetti and plenty of New York fans and otherwise get and Cowboys fans. Donovan McNabb, this weird rewriting, well, because everybody knows
awesome,
about
McNabb. He was great.
Everybody knows about the throw up on the field. And on one hand, I would say if that were on videotape, and now people are pushing back at me that didn't even actually happen. I don't know if that's a conspiracy theory. But if it were on video, it would be much more damning to his career. But nevertheless, that combined with the fact that he got chunky, well, I mean, that's really committed.
Yeah, but you know what is on video? The three interceptions.
Sponsorship
Ricky
is to actually
NFC Championship game. That is on video. Ricky Manning Jr. picking him off 3 times. That's on video. The choke against the Buccaneers.
I agree.
Is on video.
Okay, but skip Aikman. And what got Eddie Spaghetti, and then what led to the back and forth between you guys and beyond, is my contention that I think Donovan McNabb might be better than Eli Manning. How say you, Brinson?
Okay, really quickly, just on Aikman, I agree. I think it's a lot closer than people think, and the weapons around Troy Aikman are second to none. Historically.
That's right. And, my friends, Sal and Kevin Hench. And I remember once talking with Bill Simmons and those other two guys. And all three of them, I couldn't believe it, all said, well, Troy Aikman doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. He's the most overrated quarterback in the Hall of Fame. Troy Aikman is. I get it completely. And I'm the first to say played behind the best offensive line of all time and had Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin and Novacek and beyond. But still, he won 3 Super Bowls. There's just, I mean, you're trying too hard if you're arguing against a guy who has 3 Lombardis. I mean, it's as simple as that.
I'm with you. That's why I don't bother trying to say that Eli Manning will not get into the Hall of Fame, because that's why he will get into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, shut up. God, he's already couching it. He already is couching it. We haven't even started yet, and he's couching his asinine, stupid, biased arguments.
Of course he's going to get in. If his name was Eli Smith and he hadn't had made two big throws on the big stage, then people are like, ah, this guy's a rich man's Joe Flacco. Let's move on. But he's not. He's Eli Manning. He's good. I think the gap between Donovan McNabb and Eli Manning is not that big. I mean, I think they're pretty similar.
Well, players. You might even put him ahead. That's the thing. You might put Donovan ahead of him, but Donovan McNabb would surely, and Tony Romo too, would rather have Eli's career because, as you said, he won those two Lombardi trophies. It doesn't mean that he was the better NFL football player, though.
I would like to look. I'm not going to sit here and just dog Eli. I think we talk about that.
Yes, you are.
No, we talk about that 2011 season where they won the Super Bowl and they were 9-17. They were okay. Eli really propped that team up. That was probably the best year of his professional career, at least from a statistical standpoint. And I think he's had moments and stretches, maybe even a full year where he's been good or above average or very good. But I mean, Eli Manning has never led the NFL in one meaningful statistical category.
Who cares that I mean, no one cares that that's the case. No fan.
Of course it matters, Costas. What are you talking about? That is the measure for most Hall of Famers. And it, by the way, if you talk to Hall of Famers about it and you say, what's the measure of who deserves to get in here? They will say Rod Woodson's the first guy who floated this one. And I feel like it's kind of the collective thought at this point is, was this guy ever the best at his position for a year? Was he in the top two or three even? Eli Manning has never been rightly one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL.
But Will wants to throw out hypotheticals like if these things that all happened didn't happen then. What if Plaxico Burress didn't shoot himself in the leg in 2008? The Giants, and I'm sorry, Dave, because I know your Steelers won in 2008. The Giants were the best team in 2008, beat the Steelers in the regular season, and would have won the Super Bowl with a healthy non-bullet in the leg Plaxico Burress. So how about that what if? And then we're talking three rings for Eli Manning instead of two. And I love Donovan McNabb. And by the way, I agree with Will. I don't think the gap between McNabb and Eli is that large. I think Donovan McNabb was awesome. I think you can make a case that McNabb is a Hall of Famer, but it's what I said on Twitter last week. You want to take a quarterback to beat the Redskins in October, you take Donovan McNabb. You want to take a quarterback to beat the Packers in January or Tom Brady and the Patriots in February, give me number 10.
The second half of your monologue there was better than the first half, because you're right about the second chunk that you just said there. But you attack Brinson for his what ifing, and you just asserted that had Plaxico not shot himself, then the Lombardi was theirs.
Somebody had to go and take it away from them. You can't say what Will said without also acknowledging what happened in 2008. Because if that doesn't happen, the Giants were clearly the best team in football that year, right?
But if you're gonna binge it,
I would like to see that Super Bowl. But go ahead.
How about David Tyree doesn't make the helmet catch? I mean, like, the, you know, and then what happens if, I don't know, like Rob Gronkowski catches that Hail Mary from Tom Brady in 2000?
Or Wes Welker catches that pass, right?
Right, exactly. There's a lot of what ifs when it comes to, and that's how football works. I mean, that's why Sheck does the NFL or
You got it.
The name, but you do the what if scenarios for the NFL, but
which I love, by the way. I love the what ifs, and I've got a Philip Rivers what if that I want to give you at some point, Jack. Maybe today or some other time.
Oh, I'd like to hear it. I'd like to hear that. As a matter of fact, I do want to jump to that one. So let's start out. I'm going to give you three options, and we're going to win, play, show those. And then also I'll give you this guy or that guy, and we'll make those decisions over these next few minutes here. Let's start off with that one. NFC East QBs of the 21st century. Win, play, show. Not one season, because the single best season. Although Romo might have a case for having had the best individual season, but probably RG3 had the best single season for any NFC East QB. McNabb, Romo, Eli. I'll start with you, Brinson. Win, play, show.
Duration of career.
I'm talking about who's the best QB. That's okay. It.
I would go Romo, win.
Clown.
That's fine.
It's a clown take. I'm sorry. It is.
Eli place and McNabb show. And by the way, got to give Spaghetti credit for that RG3 take. his 2012 season was indeed a unicorn.
Wait, so you think Romo's a Hall of Famer then, Will, is what you're saying, right? You think Tony Romo's a Hall of Fame player?
I think he is right there on the borderline of a guy who could get in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he will. And look, this is part of why McNabb won't get in either, is that there's a stigma attached to them. I think an incorrectly attached stigma to Tony Romo that he was a choker, when in reality, Tony Romo has more, as I pointed out to you on Twitter, more fourth quarter comebacks and game winning drives on a per start basis. Now, he got hurt a lot. He didn't play a lot. He suffered some rough injuries.
Yeah, Eli also played 700,000 straight starts as well. That also happened.
That's a great superpower to hang out and linger for a really long time. I'd rather have the superpower of being a better quarterback, but that's just me. And I think Romo at the height of his powers was better than Eli or McNabb ever were. And I would take Romo's best seasons and plug them in as better than Eli's best.
I would too, but let me just say this to you, Brinson. It is the Elway syndrome that the gunslinger puts his team behind the eight ball and then has to play hero to dig them out of that hole that he primarily dug for the team over the course of the preceding 50 or 55 minutes, right? I mean, there's something to be said for that.
Well, I mean, yeah, but
except Elway's better than Romo. So it's like Elway was actually a Hall of Fame quarterback and Romo's not.
Romo, as I always say, Romo didn't at the height of his powers was not Elway. But the thing that makes Elway this undeniable top five, top six quarterback of the Super Bowl era, the measure that most people would apply, well, he got those two rings, which have nothing to do with him. It's the same as Peyton winning in 2015 with that Broncos defense. Rather, the thing that Elway did is he got those three bum Broncos teams to the Super Bowl in the 80s. And people say, well, who did he even have to beat in the AFC? The Oilers were good with Warren Moon and Bernie Kosar's Browns, laugh all we want. There were good teams. It's not like it was a barren wasteland. It wasn't the NBA Western Conference in the early part of the 21st century that it was just an easy group to run over, you know? So anyway, go ahead there, Costas. You had something to say, or just give us your win play show.
The Tony Romo thing being number, like, if you wanted to make the argument, like, Romo's the show, right, or place, whatever the lingo is that we use there. Number one is Eli Manning, because Eli's won two Super Bowls, so he's got to be number one. Like, you can't make an argument that anyone else is number one because Eli's had the most success. The point of the whole damn thing is to win championships. Eli's got the most. In fact, of the three guys we're discussing, he's got two. They've got none. Eli's first, McNabb is second, Romo is third. All are great quarterbacks, but Eli is clearly the first, and then I would put McNabb over Tony Romo. And I love Tony Romo. I think Romo's criminally underrated, but you can't put him above McNabb, and you can't put him above Eli.
You just criminally underrated him.
You're underrating the other two.
The whole thing is out of whack. The thing I'll say to you that I say, I think about four times per episode these days is all this QB evaluation and who's a Hall of Famer is all thrown out of whack until we take Bob Greasy's jacket away. That's what screwed everything up. Like, well, he has two rings and you got to put guys who have two rings. Well, then what about Plunkett? Like, Plunkett's not a Hall of Famer. And really, I get it. Eli is great and he had those two runs and the numbers are going to be hard to argue against with another year to build him up that much more. And that combined with he vanquished the GOAT twice in the big game. But still, Eli Manning was never in the conversation, even forget top three. He was never for 1 year in the conversation for a top eight QB. I mean, that's a pretty big strike against the guy, isn't it? That you're going to give the gold jacket to. But if you take Bob Greasy's jacket away, now it allows you to not vote Eli.
I just want to, in all seriousness, like, biases aside and everything, I said this last week on Twitter, and I candidly 100% mean this. Out of all the quarterbacks we've talked about, down by four, 2 minutes left, in the biggest spot imaginable. Which quarterback would you guys want under center, leading your team not for the game-tying field goal, but for the game-winning touchdown? Who would you rather have? Who would you want the most?
Why is the team losing? Like, why is it losing because the quarterback threw a bunch of back-breaking interceptions earlier in the game, or the offense was stagnated because the quarterback wasn't good enough to let
it? Answer the question, Brinson.
Or was it a close game because the team had a great defense and they played a bunch of running.
All right, Costas, no more jive. Let's go. What is the answer to the question here?
I will take Tony Romo, and I mean that. I said it on Twitter. I was
clown.
All right, can I tell you something? I'll break the tie for you. Well, actually, I want Spaghetti to weigh in here. I know what his answer is going to be.
It's similar to, I mean, in terms of just who I want in the field, maybe picking a what David Carr said, a street ball game, Romo or McNabb, probably McNabb because he's just a better physical specimen than them. He's more mobile. Not that Tony wasn't earlier in his career, but kind of like what Costas said and why I got into it with Wes on Twitter, it was like the point of playing NFL football is to win games and to win championships. And then kind of like what Brinson was saying about, you know, if Eli won one and every game was close and like they had an awesome defense and they had an awesome running attack, then it's like, okay, I get that Eli was kind of carried, but he won twice and he was really good in both of his playoff stretches, and he didn't just beat whoever, he beat the Patriots, who were the best team of this generation. I think that counts for something. To win twice and to be MVP, to win MVP twice also counts for all.
I'm not rejecting the quality of the performances, and people do sleep on Eli. I know the Tyree catch and everything else, but he does. I mean, they beat the New England Patriots in not one but two Super Bowls. And
just out of curiosity, how many games above 500 is Mr. Winner Eli Manning for his career, this long, luxurious career of destiny? Because the answer is two. He's two games above 500. That sucks. If the purpose is to win games, then why do Eli's teams constantly end up with sub-500 records and bad seasons when he's been the one consistent factor the whole time?
I'll tell you this about, and maybe this is a little too nuanced as we try to evaluate, you know, what's happened over 20 years here. But and I whether it's fair or not, Eli, even as in the Big Apple, it's the capital of the world and everybody is looking at the Giants and everything else. Eli, you know, first overall pick, and we know how it all went down and how he got to New York. All that still, for whatever reason, never added up to him being the guy who was in the white hot spotlight in the big games, not to the degree that Tony Romo was. And I've talked to a lot of quarterbacks about this. Kurt Warner is great on this subject. I believe in the curse of Sposta for a team and for an individual. When you're supposed to do it and everybody is looking at you, save us. You got to save us. Eli was never that guy. Romo had all that pressure, and I think it's a little overstated. Oh, there's no more pressure than being the quarterback of America's team. But it is real to some extent that if you're the Cowboys quarterback, that and Tony Romo, based on the nature of his playing style, when the game came down to it, everybody was looking at nine. Save us, nine. Do it. And more often than not, as much as I used to like to laugh about him choking, he did come through. And I think by a whisker, I think if it's my life on the line, if it's the fate of the planet on the line, down four with 3 minutes to go, I think I'm going to go nine. I think I'm going to go nine.
Yeah, well, Thanos wins then. Thanos wins if that's the case. And by the way, you know, the curse of supposed to that you just mentioned now. What about in 2006 when the Giants had that season that ended with the playoff overtime loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, and all the back page headlines wanted to fire Tom Coughlin and wanted to run Eli Manning out of town. And then week one, lose to the Dallas Cowboys. And remember, we thought Eli might be hurt and done for the season in that game. Week two, lose at home to Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers, and the sky is falling. And all the Giants did from that point forward was not lose one road game the rest of the season. Supposed to. Eli Manning, that Tiki Barber retired and trashed Eli Manning to the media before the 2007 season. So I disagree with that completely. Eli rose to the occasion in a major way in 2007. And by the way, won a Super Bowl. And by the way, Will wants to throw out the number two, Eli Manning, two games above 500 for his career. You know what number two matters more than that one? Lombardi trophies. Suck it, Brinson.
Look, that's the thing is, like, you can present. This is how New York fans operate. It's no surprise. And it's
you hate New York. Just admit that you hate New York. Just get it out there that you hate New York because the Yankees own your Braves. And because you hate, because Eli Manning has upstaged your boy Rivers for the better part of two decades.
Is that true, Brinson?
No, I like New York. My point is that you can't have some subtle, nuanced argument about Eli Manning's career with the Giants fan for more than 15 seconds before they scream, rings, rings, what are you talking about? Lombardi's.
You said he's Joe Flacco.
I mean, that's Joe Flacco's argument is he rises to the occasion in the playoffs and has a Super Bowl. It's like, you know, that's why
one.
He has to Hey, yes, right. I mean, Eli Manning had two great playoff runs, but if you look at the totality of Eli Manning's career, the only argument you have for him as great is that he had two great playoff runs, thanks fueled in large part by really strong pass rush and defenses, and that he never got hurt.
Well, then you get into the philosophical debate, as you said last week, Brinson, that still ultimately, as much as we can talk up Romo or McNabb or anybody else, but, you know, Dan Marino would be an interesting guy to ask that question to. Whose career would you rather have, yours or Eli Manning's? That would be I'd love to hear the answer to that one, because then it's do you rather have the totality of the career, or would you rather have those couple of shining moments? It's a fine question. But OK, let's do. But is it true you hate New York, though?
I love the city of New York. And the people of New York.
What about the people? You're cool with the people, though?
I love it. Well, no, I don't like the people.
You hate New York sports because you are jealous because you're not from New York. And I'm not saying that to everyone. I'm saying that specifically to Will, that Will is jealous because he's not from New York. And he can't root for the Yankees. And he can't root for
who's
these
more
teams.
Carolina than Will Brinson? He's I don't think he pines to live somewhere else.
I do not. I would not last long in New York.
He seems to enjoy watching NC State sports. I don't think he's looking to move. Yeah.
I don't like the Yankees, but that's fine. That doesn't mean I have some bias against the Giants. I think my argument against Eli and the Eli supporters, I'm not going to call you a rude name or anything, is pretty similar to the argument that most other people make. Like, it's not that different. I've been making it for a long time.
Okay, last thing I will say to validate Brinson's side of things is there in the 21st century, high-end QBs, there are very few examples of guys that that are on consistent losers. If you're a high-quality NFL QB, name for me the guy who is on – yeah, he's great individually, but the team, yeah, they go 6-10 a lot. There isn't one. Drew Brees went 7-9 three straight seasons. Phil Rivers missed the playoffs for too long a stretch, probably.
What about Romo?
Romo's
three straight years the Cowboys had winning in games on Sunday Night Football. I know Orton had the last one. They didn't win any of them.
Fair. Okay. That's a fair point. That's fair pushback, Brinson. You got to give it to him.
Romo's almost 30 games above 500 for his career.
All right, but in the big spot, he came up lame, and that's a fair knock to some degree.
You'll put the fate of the planet in his hands, in Romo's hands.
Listen, it's an imperfect solution no matter what. Now,
resulting in the annihilation of the human race.
You know who I want? I want more than Eli or Romo in the big spot? Number 7, Ben Roethlisberger. Win, play, show. Fair 2004 enough. Quarterbacks.
Ooh.
This is perfect. This is ideal because I'm a Pittsburgh guy and the Giants wanted Ben Roethlisberger more than they wanted the other two guys. The San Diego Chargers wanted Eli and instead went with Phil Rivers and Bill Cowher from NC State wanted Phil Rivers and wound up with Roethlisberger. We now know how it shook out a decade and a half later. I'm going to start with you on this one, Costas. No, you know what? Before we get to this, because we each have our rooting interests, Eddie Spaghetti, you also have a rooting interest. Win, play, show, the 2004 first-round QBs, leaving out J.P. Losman.
I mean, Eli is the worst of the three in terms of what he could do on the field, but he automatically beats Rivers.
I think that's the only thing that matters.
But you're going by not by blank resume.
Oh, I don't
Eli
know. You just said
very
in
well
terms
may,
of football
I mean,
stuff.
Ben will probably beat him all time resume because Ben's a little bit younger and probably has more years than Eli left. So I guess Ben could be one and then Eli would be two just because they have the two Super Bowls and you put Rivers third. But in terms of talent, Eli would be third.
Let me throw this one in here, fellas. Well, I want to hear your raw answer, but also, what if, and I think the Colts, as you said, Costas, are going to be dynamite this year, and to me, right now, if I have to make a pick, I'll take the Colts to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC, but the Chargers are also loaded, and the sad irony would be if the thing that fails them this year is Phil Rivers finally hits the wall, which is a possibility.
God, I hope so.
It could happen, but what if the Chargers win the Super Bowl this year? If the Chargers win the Super Bowl, how does that disrupt, you know, the preceding 15 years? All right, Costas, do it as it stands right now through 15 full seasons, win, play, show, 2004 QBs?
Roethlisberger 1, Eli 2, Rivers 3.
Hmm. Brinson, how say you?
It is, I will say this, I think there are two different ways to look at this. I think there's three different ways to look at it.
Well, oh, good. Well, yeah, there are four.
Add another one.
You have three names, so you can work in each of them in your three scenarios here.
I think that if you looked at this based on Hall of Fame resume, mm-hmm. that Ben Roethlisberger is first, and it's by a pretty large margin. He's 144-69, right, in his career.
Never had a losing season.
It's a bloodbath of the other guys. Now, has he had a better supporting cast? Of course. I think if you're talking about who will get into the Hall of Fame first.
I do want to interrupt you, though, and say this, because I am here to vouch for seven. Roethlisberger, this thing that people have now moved on from is the big knock is, he was terrible in those Super Bowls. He's lucky he had a good defense because he wouldn't have won. First of all, the first one, they don't get anywhere close to without number seven being the best player on the field against the Colts and then in Denver to get to that first Super Bowl against the Seahawks. Yes, he was crummy once he got there. Two, the other ring that he got is owed to not the number one defense. Yes, obviously they were in a position to go deep in the playoffs because they had the number one seed, but once they got into that postseason and into that Super Bowl, it was number seven behind a bottom 10 offensive line in the NFL throughout the entire season. And in fact, it went on for several years that offensive line in Pittsburgh was crummy. And Roethlisberger overcame that. How many quarterbacks, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, maybe in the 21st century can continually overcome not just a mediocre, but a subpar offensive line the way Roethlisberger did in the prime of his career, whether he had Santonio Holmes or not?
That is an unbelievable homer take. Like, I think Ben's the best because I think it's clear that Ben's the best. Like, I don't think there's any, I don't think you need to vouch for Ben Roethlisberger. I think Ben out of these guys is clearly the best. No, I'm saying, Dave, that's a homer take from Damashek there.
Why?
How about in 2008, Tom Brady tore his ACL in week one, and the Steelers never would have gotten there if Brady had been healthy. And then, like I said, Plaxico Burress shot himself in the leg. The Giants beat the Steelers in the regular season. Giants would have won the Super Bowl. Sorry. So I don't even think that's a great argument. I just think Ben's the best because Ben's the best. Like, if you've watched 15 years worth of these three guys, Roethlisberger's the best of the three. I don't even think it's close, really, either.
All right. Well, I don't know what's wrong about my take when Eli or Phil Rivers or any number of other guys wouldn't be able to overcome a crummy O-line the way Roethlisberger did. But all right. Now, Brinson.
Look, I'm not going to do anything silly. I'll just say Ben when Rivers played Eli.
That's not going to make Costas happy.
Yeah, of course not. Well, I mean, I'm not going to go.
He's got a Philip Rivers doll over his right shoulder. Like, of course. And he's an NC State fanboy. And he hates the fact that Eli has upstaged his boy for 15 years. I don't blame him. I'd hate him too.
If you polled 100 reasonable, objective people who watch the NFL on a regular basis, 95 of them would tell you that Philip Rivers is a better quarterback than Eli Manning.
Is he going to the Hall of Fame?
He'll get into the Hall of Fame, yes.
Do you agree with that, Costas? All three of these guys?
He's going to get Rivers is going to get the sympathy vote. So, I mean, he'll probably go.
Well, then that legitimately, you know what, though? That's the thing. You know, Jerome Bettis waited a little bit. How long did Curtis Martin wait? He didn't go straight in, did he? Or TD definitely waited. Guys of a certain era, when you're playing the same position, obviously there's going to be a little bit of a backlog there. So the idea that we can just kiss these guys in, there's, you know, when the voters are, they're not going to sit down and say, like, yep, Roethlisberger and Eli and Rivers. They better separate in when they retire, or else it's going to be tough to put all three of them in. And then once you get another season in and another quarterback retires like Aaron Rodgers, well, he's going to go in before Phil Rivers does. It could get in the way of Eli and Rivers for a little bit. So
that was sort of my point, Dave. It's like, if you think about it like this, let's say all three of those guys retired in the exact same year, and there wasn't anybody else, no Rodgers or whoever else you want to deal with, to Russell Wilson, to backlog those guys. What would be the order that they would go in? And I think that the answer would be Ben. He would get in first, and then the next year Eli would get in, and then the next year Philip Rivers would get in, and Eli would get in. And I'm not dogging Eli here, but I think that Eli, because of the rings, and because his last name is Manning, is going to carry more weight when it comes to the Hall of Fame votership.
I would agree with you about, you know, listen, that there's more. By the way, my number one criterion, and I always think that the cools, Mina Kimes, who Brinson, you and I like to kibitz with on the Twitter and otherwise, she's a big, oh, QB wins, who cares? Like, well, they give out the one trophy at the end. That's why they do the season. What are we? If that isn't a valid thing to point to, then I can't imagine what is. Why don't we just end the season around Christmas and celebrate everybody's numbers in that case? I mean, that's why they play the season to completion and give one person the trophy to hoist up above everybody else. So it does matter who wins the rings. All right. I'm sorry. I had another point there, but I kind of lost my train of thought as I want to get in a couple other things here.
If you're a below 500 quarterback.
Oh, that was my point. That was what I was going to say. Fine that there are other measures. Dan Marino is better. I love when dumb people love to, well, so Marino's not as good as Flacco or Trent Dilfer. I mean, then let's not be dumb. However, Phil Rivers, as I said, missed the playoffs for a long stretch. It's not like he's some consistent winner covering up the warts in all of his teams to the extent that he gets them into January. Huh?
I mean, look, Rivers has gotten some rough. Look, I think that Rivers has had a rougher time than the other two guys in terms of organizational structure. I don't think anybody would question that. Now, he sat behind Breeze for a couple of years, and then, you know, he didn't.
Okay. But he also did have a top five all-time tight end, and he had a top 8 or 10 running back behind him, and he had a nice offensive line for a long time. But okay.
Dave, can I toss something out at you, Dave, here?
I'd like
this kind
to.
Of in defense of, actually, I kind of want to defend Phillip Rivers a little bit here. And I still think Eli's better than him, but this is kind of the what if, and like I've wanted, like I
go
love
ahead. Oh yeah, here
you,
we go.
I love how much you love this stuff, Dave, in all sincerity. Like I love how much you love it, and I love this stuff the same way. I posit, and I have felt this from the day that it happened, that if Phillip Rivers and LaDainian Tomlinson were both healthy in January of 2008, the Chargers would have beaten the Patriots in that AFC Championship game, the undefeated Patriots, and played the Giants in the Super Bowl. And this would have been a completely different conversation because we would have gotten Rivers against Eli, plus North Turner would have beaten Bill Belichick in an AFC Championship game. Because that Chargers team at full strength, I think, was better than that Patriots team by the time that game rolled around, AFC Championship.
As it was with, I can't think of his name. Who picked the ball off and fumbled it?
Marlon McCray.
I mean, yeah, there are two examples right there of games that they had won in January. Yeah, I'm with you about that and how we would regard Phil Rivers would be very different. And by the way, the nails to go out there and play on the torn ligament is impressive stuff. Okay, some quick ones for you real fast before I let you guys go. Ben Roethlisberger. Now, I don't know what measure you want to apply. Is it last 5 minutes of a game, of a big game, one game, the whole season, the whole career? Who do you like better, Ben Roethlisberger, Steve Young? I start with you, Costas.
Steve Young. I think Steve Young is the most underrated quarterback in the history of the NFL, despite the fact that he's in the Hall of Fame. I think, you know, I've been watching football since 1990. Which is a great, great year to watch. Giants won the Super Bowl religiously every Sunday since then, obsessively. Steve Young, I think a case could be made, is like one of the two or three best quarterbacks of the last 30 years. I think Steve Young, again, despite the fact that he's in the Hall of Fame, I think he's the most underrated quarterback in the history.
I'm not opposed to that. And Steve Mariucci, who knows the high-end QBs, both Montana and Young, and obviously Favre and everybody else from Green Bay. And David Carr would tell you that Steve Young is a superior quarterback to Joe Montana. There are people, and Mooch says he'd rather have Steve Young over Joe Montana for a big game. That's a bold remark to make. But if your measure is in part that you come up lame in the big game, Steve Young demonstrably fell off over the course of his career in the postseason.
Why? Because he lost to that unbelievable Cowboys team a number of times?
Because he personally played worse than he typically did in November and December compared to how he performed in January. If you can't sustain some, I understand you're going against better defenses, but if you can't come somewhere close to the standard that you've set, then you are failing your team. That's the Barry Bonds syndrome. Like, get me to the World Series. No, you're the best player on our team. You have to hit in the championship series as well. You don't get to take a round off. Yeah, Steve Young came up lame in some big spots in his career. Roethlisberger How many times did he come up lame in January?
Not very often. Ben likes to come up lame in a random week 13 game against a 4-3.
That's right. Against bad teams on the road. That's where he comes up lame.
I mean, it is. It's just weird how they do that every year. That might be a Mike Tomlin thing. At any rate, I think I would take Steve Young, too, in terms of just the pure talent. But I think Steve Young is a great example, much like Carson Palmer. And I think this is why people would be hyped up for the Buccaneers and Jameis Winston, that coaching and situation does matter. Like Carson Palmer was great for the Bengals and then fell off a cliff, but then he got back with Bruce Arians and he nearly won MVP and Cam not beating him out. And I think Steve Young's the same kind of case, right? Until he gets the opportunity to play for Bill Walsh and he had to sit behind Montana for a while. Was he like 29 or 30 when he won that first Super Bowl? So that maybe that's part of why your play tails off a little bit, because you don't take care of your body as much. I think at the end of the day, if you sit down with the resume and blindly compare Ben Young, you would pick Ben's numbers and Ben's stats and Ben's career. But I think I would take Steve Young in terms of the quarterback.
All right, so be it. That's fine. People also forget that Roethlisberger, for the first half of his career, was a high-end runner, a physical runner, a poor man's Cam Newton. Maybe that's a little bit extreme to say that, because
I don't think it is.
20 yards downfield, he wasn't dangerous, but he would truck guys in the same way Cam Newton still does.
Ben was kind of a I don't want to call him a unicorn because he was like more like a potato, but like Ben was a unique he was a unique athlete in the NFL when he came along.
No, I remember Ben's bowl game, watching it my junior year at Fordham and watching Ben of Miami of Ohio like pinballing off defenders and being like, this is the guy I want the Giants to take. He really was, like, to your point, Dave, he was an exceptional.
How about that? I said
runner.
That. Yeah. That I definitely was on the record with that. I said Eli Manning, fine. Phil Rivers. I'm prejudiced against that weird throwing motion. Seeing him at NC State, I just didn't like it. I just didn't see how that could work in Pittsburgh in big spots. And I always liked Roethlisberger. It's the eyeball test. I don't need all the scouts to tell me what he did in the 40 at the combined. Now, a couple more quickly. Derek Carr, this is for 2019. Derek Carr or Joe Flacco, who do you want?
Well, I have to stay true to my brand here, having been blocked by the entire Carr family. And I'll take.
Wait, David blocked you too?
Who doesn't like?
David Carr blocked you. Yeah. I'll have a talk with him. David and I are going to drive Derek and hopefully Antonio Brown up to from Bakersfield up to the East Bay for training camp in a month or two. So I'll have a good opportunity to have a long conversation. Maybe we'll surprise them and have you in the trunk, and we'll or maybe you could meet us at a rest stop somewhere. Like, whoa, Will Brinson.
Hey, what are you doing here?
Oh, right, right. You know what? Now that we're friends, let's unblock our friend Will here. Right.
I do think that I would anticipate in 2019 that Derek Carr will have better numbers than Joe Flacco. If that doesn't happen, then I would be concerned about what might happen in the future at the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, this season is everything for Derek Carr. Who knows what abyss he'll go into. If he doesn't perform for the Raiders this season, it'll be interesting to see where he lands after this one. Go ahead, Costas. Do you want Derek Carr, Joe Flacco this season?
I think Carr will have better numbers. I'd rather have Joe Flacco than Derek Carr. Carr's got that Jim Everett 1989 NFC Championship game kind of feel to him, where as soon as pressure even gets remotely near him, he gets really skittish. It's kind of weird, and we saw it happen many times last year. And look, the Raiders' offensive line should be better here, assuming Colton Miller is not a spinning top again like he was last year. But I'd rather have Flacco. I think Flacco's tougher than Derek Carr. And I think Joe Flacco, you ready for it, Will Brinson? Joe Flacco is a winner.
He is. He is the weirdest. He has got to be the weirdest case study in a guy who – impossibly rises up against the two best teams that he has to see over the course of his career. Always plays well against the Patriots, always shows up in Heinz Field, and yet is not capable of week in and week out beating bum teams to the extent that these coaching staffs keep coming in. Let's build it. Let's be a 21st century offense by about week six, year after year. Oh, yeah, Joe Flacco is just not good enough to go this way. We got to run the ball more. And yet when he plays the good teams, he performs.
I mentioned Eli Manning doesn't, you know, never led the league in any statistical category except interceptions. Joe Flacco, this is remarkable that he has played quarterback for literally 10 years. And he has, if you go to his PFR page, his Football Reference page, there's not one bold number. He has never led the league in anything. Interceptions, sacks, yards per attempt, passing attempts, passing completions.
Yeah, I got two bold numbers for you, Will Brinson, for Joe Flacco. 11-0. 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions on a run to a Super Bowl championship. Who cares about the other stuff?
A Ravens fan should. Well, the Ravens, I mean, how long is that going to keep you warm? I think the Ravens fans largely moved on. Like, all right, that was a great run, but now it's getting too far in the rearview mirror. All right, speaking of that, Lamar Jackson or Andy Dalton for 2019. Costas, go.
Ooh, I actually think Andy Dalton has a chance to be decent this year, but I don't think you can pick Andy Dalton. There's too much unknown right now with the Bengals, and you kind of love what the Ravens did in the draft, right, with Justice Hill and Hollywood Brown and Boykin, all the speed that they're trying to put around Lamar Jackson. So if I had to take, like, the player himself, I'd probably take Andy Dalton, more of a proven commodity than Lamar Jackson, but I think you kind of have to factor situation into it also, right? So I guess you kind of have to take Lamar, but I think Dalton's a little underrated heading into this year.
I kind of hear you, although they should have taken the Bengals should have taken Lamar Jackson last year when he was sitting there in the first round, although now we do see that the Ravens have kind of pigeonholed themselves. They're going to be down 10 points at the half in multiple games this year, and it'll be interesting to see if Lamar Jackson and their philosophy can win out in second halves. Brinson, how say you?
Lamar Jackson with Greg Roman, Andy Dalton if Lamar Jackson doesn't have him.
Okay, interesting.
Like that.
And last one, and then we'll say our goodnights. Ben Roethlisberger or Baker Mayfield for 2019, Brinson.
That's a good one. That's a tough one.
And I want you not sit. This is not sit. Well, you can do their two situations, but then flip them. Put Roethlisberger on that Browns team and Baker Mayfield on the Steelers.
No, I mean, I'll take Big Ben. I mean, I think he's gonna have a huge year. I'm gonna pick him for MVP. I mean, he's my MVP sleeper pick, but I'm just straight up gonna pick him. And I think the Steelers are gonna have a better year. I think the pressure and all the changes and the offensive line issues. I do worry a little bit about Mike Munchak leaving the Steelers.
That is the
big concern for me in Pittsburgh. But I think all the pressure and expectations in Cleveland is going to be a bit much. I think Baker could take a little bit of a step back. I love Baker's, but QB1 coming out of the draft last year. But I'll take Ben this year as Nick said, the big bleep you season.
I think Baker's probably got a chance to put up better numbers than Ben, just given the players around him. But who's going to win more games this season? Who's got a better chance of winning a Super Bowl? Who would I rather have? Down by 4, not by 3, with 2 minutes to go, Ben Roethlisberger or Baker Mayfield? Give me number 7 in black and gold, Ben Roethlisberger.
Very interesting. Yeah, the Steelers don't have the depth that I'd like them to see, but if they can stay right, especially on that defensive front, as good as those three can be, if you watched the second half of the season last year, how good Tuitt and Hargrave and Hayward can be, they just don't have a lot backing them up. If they can stay relatively healthy, I'm kind of with you that the Steelers have a great shot to win the AFC North. All right, dynamite stuff. Spaghetti, give it a review. Who won today?
The Giants fans won.
Oh, come on.
That's what it comes down to. I do have one question. I just, after hearing that, and I don't want to continue this another half hour. I'm sure the guys are busy. But it's like, what?
How long did we go? Did we go too long here?
Guess, do you have a time you want to guess?
Well, I just looked at the clock. It's way later than I thought.
Yeah, we went an hour, 2 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry, fellas. I feel like a heel.
Just after hearing.
No, I love talking football. It's all good.
My question is just, what are Giants/Eli fans supposed to say or act? Like, that's, and I guess Nick can't really answer this question because he's in the same boat as me, but it's like, what are we supposed to say or do? With a guy who's going to end up top 10 in passing yards and touchdowns and a guy who has 2 Super Bowl MVPs, what are we supposed to say and think about a guy who's had a successful career when ultimately the point of rooting for a team and being quarterback of a team is to win a championship? So that's what I just don't understand.
That's a great question, a very fair question. I don't expect you to, I mean, like, in the same vein that I expect you to keep saying, like, this offensive line can be great this year, and I expect Nick to keep saying Daniel Jones is the truth, this is happening, baby, Dave Gettleman's taking us down the promised path, you have to do that. That's blind fandom. I think the New Yorker in you guys comes out a little more, the aggressive nature. to maybe sort of claw and scratch and defend Eli. Well, you could say, yes, Eli has his faults and he's laid many a egg in the regular season, but gosh darn it, he wins a Super Bowl.
Okay. And that's all that matters. That's all that matters is the two Super Bowls.
Sure,
nothing
that's what
else.
I totally agree with that too. Because you can make a guy like, I don't know, I think he has a chance of winning one. But let's just say Andrew Luck, who was like tatted from the minute he was at Stanford, doesn't win a single ring, and he has a great, very prolific passing career. It's like, well, he was great and probably will get in the Hall of Fame on pure stats or whatever. But it's like when it comes down to his career wasn't really a success. Like Eli's was, because Eli won twice. That's like my issue with like people who attack Eli's, because like he did what you're supposed to do twice.
And I would also agree. Look, propping up Eli here a little bit. Like I was in the stadium in that 2011 Super Bowl. So on like up in the auxiliary press box, I saw the throw to Manningham. You know what I mean? Like the throws Eli has made in these moments are exceptional, and he does have that clutch ability gene. Maybe the same way that Derek Jeter did, also another overrated New York guy, but we don't need to get into that.
Jeter is overrated, by the way. I will agree with you on that. I'm a Yankee fan, and I'll say that.
But I mean, I think that's one of the differences too, is that this isn't like a Trent Dilfer situation where Eli got rings because he was on a great team with a great defense. Now, he was helped by a great defense, but Eli made some big boy throws in the moments and has had an above average career an average to above average career. Right? And so I think for all the, everybody gets worked up, but yes, Eli Manning has some championship moments, and that's why we lend more credence to those rings, because he made those throws when the moments counted, like Flacco did.
Well, and you know what? The voters are, as much as they like to take up residency unnecessarily up on Mount Pius, and look down.
They're
at the
worst.
They love to do that, but it does matter, and the voters are human beings at the end of it, and it does matter, the visceral memories. It's the Lynn Swann argument. Well, Drew Pearson should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. He was the best receiver of the 70s, but Lynn Swann is in the Hall of Fame because he made big plays that are iconic in the biggest spots of the sport. Eli Manning beat Tom Brady. He didn't win Super Bowls. He beat the New England Patriots twice. So he's got to go to the Hall of Fame, whether you like it or not. Then it gets into that philosophical argument, which is a little different with me, to make it like baseball. If the Pittsburgh Pirates would win one, or if the Kansas City Royals, as they did a few years ago, their fan base should at least be kept warm for the next quarter century by that one championship. But it's an uneven playing field in Major League Baseball. In football, it is egalitarian. The stink of parity is going to ultimately. The Patriots have gotten in the way. They've done the NFL a big favor in the 21st century because they have sort of obscured the parity that otherwise would exist here. You would see, when every team's number comes up, it will no longer feel that satisfying. It's the syndrome effect in The Incredibles. When everybody is super, no one is. You understand? If everybody starts winning, that Joe Flacco and Trent Dilfer must be the exceptions to the rule. If everybody gets theirs, and Nick Foles gets one, and Alex Smith won one because they didn't yank him that season, and if he had one, it wouldn't feel as satisfying to hold up like that guy, Troy Aikman. Has three rings. If everybody starts getting one, it's going to be bad. And that's my fear for the NFL once Tom Brady retires.
And don't forget that three of the rings that we're talking about, two with Eli and then one with Nick Foles, were beating the Patriots, right?
Yeah, right.
This constant presence. Like if you took the losers of all those Super Bowls and gave Andy Reid and McNabb one and gave Cam Newton and Ron Rivera one, and you hand one out to every team that lost to the Patriots, all of a sudden the Super Bowl, the value of a Super Bowl ring in the past 15 years changes dramatically.
That's right.
Is there a lazier argument, Dave, than the Trent Dilfer argument? That's like, well, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl and the Ravens felt so bad about it that they dumped him for Elvis Gerback the following season. It's like, Trent Dilfer didn't even start for the Ravens the year after he won. I hate that argument. Well, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl, so how hard could it be?
And by the way,
I hate that.
By the way, history ignores, was not terrible in the back half of that season, Trent Dilfer. He's not, by the way, a bit of trivia for you guys to pass along. When people say, Trent Dilfer, worst quarterback to ever start a Super Bowl. No, it's the late David Woodley. in the Super Bowl 7 in the 17
against the Redskins.
Against the Redskins. That's your worst starting quarterback in NFL history. All right, good times, fellas. I hope we didn't keep you too long. One last thing, Costas, just admit, Mark Messier is the dirtiest legend in any sport ever, right?
I sincerely don't know if I agree with that, and I'm totally cool if other people think that because in 1994 he broke the curse. That may or may not be true, but he also won in 1994, so that did happen. All and right. He's not as good as Mario Lemieux, though. To be fair, that is just a fact.
All right. Now, that I appreciate, and that's a note I think anyone with any sense can agree with. And he was also better than that other Rangers center iceman who wore 99. That's a conversation.
Close, though. Close.
I mean, all right. Well, I'm not going to do it unless you guys want to settle in for another 6 hours. Then I'm in. You want to do 6 hours right now? You don't
want
to?
And by the way, it certainly helped that Lemieux won those Stanley Cups with a pretty good player next to him in Jaromir Jagr, and Kevin Stevens was pretty good too. So it's not it's not like those Penguins teams were not absolutely loaded. So let's not pretend that wasn't the case.
I mean, Brinson. I'm glad Brinson's shaking his head, because I wouldn't want to spend the next 6 hours and at the end of it have Costas go like, you know what? You were right 6 hours ago, Dave. You know what? I should have just listened to you. Now I'll never get those 6 hours back. Thank you, Brinson, for bringing some sense to the proceedings here. Spaghetti, you know I'm right, right?
I'm staying out of this. Let's just stay positive. No more debating. I'm done with the New York sports debates. I need to take a break.
This wasn't about New York. This was about the greatest hockey player of all time.
I'm not, just take the hint. I'm not going to get into it because I might not agree.
Oh, you're a big Edmonton Oilers fan, are you? You love
that. Why is that an insult to say Lemieux is not as good as Wayne Gretzky? Like, Lemieux is probably number two.
Because it matters. It's the same reason that we're having any of these conversations. Of course, Eli Manning and Phil Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger are all great and rich. But that this thing when people who care about sports say, who cares about LeBron versus Michael Jordan? Like, that's the whole real. That's what's fun about following sports, is to have these conversations. And Lemieux is better than Gretzky. And if I just am not going to half-ass it here. If you want to have a full discourse on it, let me know and we can have that conversation. I'm just not going to do it willy-nilly here. And I'm certainly not going to do it while Will Brinson sits there and tries to conjure an argument for I don't even know who. Ray Ferraro? What?
Yeah, he's Brinson's a big Cam Ward guy.
Well, with good reason, I guess.
I'm a bandwagon hockey fan. I'm not afraid to admit it.
I was happy to see Jordan Staal thriving down there this spring. All right, listen, Nick Costas, what a delight. I hope you'll come back. I hope we didn't hold on to you so long that you'll regret ever or you'll turn us down if we offer again. And Will Brinson, as always, what a great pleasure to catch up with you. We'll talk to you, I hope, in late August, early September for our annual NFC South QB rankings. It'll be our fourth annual at this point.
Gotta slap some egg on our face again.
And Will Brinson, of course, Pick Six, CBS Sports. Follow him. He really is one of the great follows on Twitter. Funny and insightful, and so on and so forth. And what's further, the hair, you know, it speaks for itself. Nick Costas, a pleasure to see you. Sports Illustrated and Odd Shark. Let's do it again, fellas.
Anytime, Dave.
Would love to.
There they go. Good argument there, Spaghetti, right? You enjoyed it?
This was a great episode.
All right. I hope you did, too, out there. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce, I believe, with Maurice Jones-Drew, who shall be the next person to sit in the hot seat and hear that I was right all along. I told you before and after that Super Bowl that Todd Gurley was never going to be right again.
And another running back.
It doesn't make me happy, though.
That the Bills just took Devin Singletary, making an appearance, too, next Thursday.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that already. All right. Until then, it's been a thin slice of heaven.